Everybody please stand. We're going to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll have a moment of silence for all our service personnel and first responders. First item would be the roll call, please.
Director Sanderson?
Here.
Director Morris?
Here.
Director Wargo? Director Israel?
She is not attending the meeting.
Absent. Director Link?
Here.
General Manager Calvin Louie?
Here.
Is Cindy Byron on the phone? Absent. And then we have Evelyn.
First item is approval of Finance and Audit Committee minutes, meeting minutes and warrants, approval and the regular board meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I make a motion we approve the Finance and Audit Committee meeting minutes, as long as you have to amend the new financials that Ellie has uploaded online, not the ones that came out.
So those are,
Mr. Diaz?
The ones in the meeting minutes are correct.
Okay, then I make a motion to approve. Second that.
So I have a motion to approve the consent calendar items, Finance and Audit Committee meeting minutes and warrants of January 19th, 2021, and the regular board meeting minutes and warrants of January 19th, 2021, made by Director Wargo, second by Director Sanderson?
Aye.
Director Morris?
Aye.
Director Wargo?
Aye.
Director?
Aye. Well, there's no warrants. No awards of contracts. Next item is updates. So San Gregorio Pass Regional Water Alliance update. Mrs. Warren. Next item is manager's report by Director or Cal Moody, General Manager. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chairman Link and members of the board. Taylor, Director Valdiva, General Director Eckhart, and community members. The manager's report is a brief Reader's Digest version of our events and updates regarding your community water distribution. First on the press, public safety power shutoffs.
Susan Blair.
Management coordination with Edison issues any flash reports for public safety power shutdowns, predicting potential de-energizing selected Cabazon circuits, and we have management. However, there is a critical power outage notice for Saturday, February 20th, between 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. This will affect the district's headquarters, which means the computer and the SCADA will be out of service, which means that I'll be flying blind. Flying blind means for those of you who are familiar with it, being a pilot, there's no IFR or no instruments. So I will be available to respond to the town if it is prepared. Hopefully, either the EMD or Edison will notify me by email and text that at 4 p.m. the power will be back up. Meantime, our IT Accent Computer Solution will be remotely powering down to 20% of our mainframe here at the office. In January, I drafted a watch procedure in the event that there is a Edison alert and event, including this watch procedure that I passed out and shared with the board and the employees here, was a list of the definition and acronyms to assist the reader, such as our district water operators and field crew, to understand the EMD flash report and the PSPS, which they report their condition and status on a spreadsheet. Since then, I've secured an approval from the union that Article 9 of the MOU, which is compensatory, and Article 10 of the MOU, overtime, will apply to district employees in the bargaining unit that is assigned the PSPS watch detail. This detail requires a certified operator to monitor and respond any crucial alert or events, either issued by Edison or the county EMD flash report, that are indicating any interruption in the operation or potential damage to district production wells, water apparatus, or infrastructure. In the event the general manager is out of town in an area where there is unreliable cell signal coverage or internet connectivity, then I will assign a certified water operator /report and PSPS alert or event. The most crucial hours are between 9 p.m. to 8 in the morning, as these are the off-peak and super off-peak. Edison offers their electric rate to operate the district's 250 and 300 horsepower electric pump motors. The other scenario when a physical response to Cabazon during a PSPS event, such as the Fingal circuit, is de-energized. It may be partially de-energized. This affects the district's headquarters, which again, either the water operator or I am flying blind again. However, if it's partial, the other half, the production wells are fine. Based on my personal experience, I do not trust technology. I have to see with my own eyes, and that's what I preach to our workers here in the district. This is when in the middle of the night we got to come out and actually see well running and to ensure that it meets the following day's demand. On January 26th, there was a virtual winter power briefing with by Edison. I think I included that in your package, the PowerPoint. It included Kelly Garcia, Principal Manager of Government and Institution, Robert Stein, Senior Advisor of Government Relationship and PSPS Enhancement, and Erica Keaton, Principal Manager Demand Response Products and Summer Reliability Program, and Robert Thomas, Director of Pricing, Design, Research, Regulatory, and Rate Update. For those of you that have read and reviewed that, are there any questions about this topic? Coronavirus, the district will continue to execute the following actions regarding COVID-19. As of February 10th of last week, the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, in coordination with Riverside County Public Health and District Management, has the following update on COVID-19. Management continues to take the following preventive and protective measure. Again, we encourage board members and this community's water team members to reassure any concerned residents or water customers that may express concerns regarding the safety of the tap water. The transmission of COVID-19 through tap water is 99.9% untrue. The measured dose of sodium hypochlorite, which is a form of chlorine, kills most bacteria and viruses. The lobby continues to remain closed to the public under further direction is received from the state and county health officials. Management will continue to protect the health of district employees. Again, face masks are required when you are engaged with public contact. A barrier is at the transaction window. Customer accounts will handle checks, money orders, and each cash wearing nitrile gloves provided by the district. And the current confirmed COVID-19 as of February 10 is 299. Four resulted in death, and 248 have recovered. The community's water district will continue to work with water customers that are experiencing hardship and paying their water bill. However, just to front load the board, there will be an item on the future agenda on resuming penalties and interest. Management has also researched what other water districts are doing. City of Bandon is encouraging to conduct your business and pay your utilities bills online or by mail. Or if you must go to the City Hall, they require social distancing and face masks. Coachella Valley Water District, closed. Mission Springs Water District, closed. South Mesa Water Company, hours vary. Beaumont Cherry Valley Water District, closed. And High Valley Water District, hours vary. The Chick-fil-A project, engineers designing the water system for Chick-fil-A has submitted their comments from the district's engineering review. I will be reviewing them with the district fuel operation, and then our comments will be forwarded to the district engineer for their final recommendation. For those of you out in the public, you don't know where Chick-fil-A is. It's the old Hadley Orchards property, right there on the corner of Apache Trails and Seminole Drive. As a reminder, the district's engineer and legal has suggested that the district request that drawings and construction to include the residential water system be extended and connected with the new 12-inch pipeline. This excess cost for drawing and installation will be credited back to Chick-fil-A. I will report to the board at the next meeting of the developer's reaction to this request. Reason for the request to change the point of connection from the southeast portion of Chick-fil-A's property off of Seminole Drive to the west side on Apache Trail, the original point of the water service connection when it was serving the old Hadley Orchards store. Proposed water connection by Chick-fil-A engineer is actually a dead end. The reservation begins from that point from the east or to the east. Adding the 12-inch pipeline would benefit not only the development, but would actually loop that portion of the distribution system, enhancing pressure and flow. It also prevents or lessens the burden of having district personnel having to constantly flush another dead end. We already have enough existing dead ends in the system. We don't need to allow another dead end. Any questions about that? Director Warren, during the last couple board meetings, suggested Google Meet. due to unforeseen staff and operational change, the general manager and the new business administrative assistant, Evelyn Aguilar, she's our new replacement as your board secretary, has not addressed this issue because of the realignment required due to these occurrences. It is my plan for myself and Ms. Aguilar to address this matter prior to, and we'll report to the member about to the board at the next board meeting. Production well 4. Generally, this has been the second phase of the water production redundancy and backup. Phase 1 is production well 2, located at the Robertson Cement Plant, and production well 5 is located along the north side of Seminole. Legend Wells and Pump has disassembled and taken the electric pump order for inspection. Keith from Legend advised that there were some internal issues with the pump motor. Basically, the failures were due to wear and tear. Legend will also inspect and repair the loose and near collapse of the shaft and bowls at the production well 4. Now, here's some good news. Keith said that he can, while he rebuilds the pump motor, he can increase the motor from 300 gallons per minute to 800 gallons per minute. And this can be accomplished with the 150 horsepower electric pump motor, which would be a tremendous savings to the district in power consumption. Well 2 and well 4, they pump at 1,100 gallons per minute, and well 5 pumps 860 gallons a minute, and they're between 250 to 300 gallons, 300 horsepower. And the reason for the increase in the production is well 4 is that's a shallow well. I think the static water level is between 5 to 600 feet, whereas the other two wells are 700 to 1,100 feet. Any questions about that?
What horsepower do we have in there now?
Which one?
The one that you're saying that...
Oh, that's 150.
But what do we have in there now?
It's 150.
Okay, but we can accomplish it, so add in another 150 horsepower pump?
No, it'll just be just 150, but there's just things that they can actually accomplish to increase the flow.
Okay.
The gallons per minute. Well 5, which is located on the north side of Seminole, near the east village of the outlet. Mike Trostberg of Claybell reported that this issue has been resolved. I don't know if you recall that at the last board meeting, the waste valve was leaking. And we thought maybe that'd be another expensive repair, but the problem was just small pebbles that was located embedded into the gasket, which resulted in the escape of the sea. Fuel gaskets were installed after the valve was clear of the debris. Section well 1, we're in the process with, I think we pretty well went over the hump of the hill. Legend has stated pumping unit has been ordered. Bailing will commence and is probably completed by the date of this regular board meeting. This was due to the repair of equipment needed for bailing. Apparently a clutch within the machinery requires replacement or repair. They're going to do some video logging that will be performed several days after the bailing, and they will be reviewed by management here and the engineers. Legend will pull off the site until the pump unit arrives, and our engineer has requested that Legend provide advance notice of the anticipated schedule when they'll be back, so an on-site inspector can be arranged. Completion date for this project is April 10th, and this project is running ahead of schedule, despite some of the damages or repairs to the fire during on tank one, the vendor has completed this project and is waiting for Legend to activate production well one. Even though we've installed a temporary source of water, the washing of the interior of the tank could contaminate the community's distribution system if a backflow incident should occur. The source of water that comes directly from the production well, if any backflow incident should occur, it could be either diverted into the wastewater pond, or it would flow down the well casing. In that case, flushing the casing into the wastewater pond would eventually clear up the contamination. There's no saying in the wastewater trade, dilution is the solution. And I think I shared with you about well four a couple of years ago, we had that perchlorate. And for almost 4 days, I flushed it 16 hours a day where Robertson didn't even call, hey, what's going on? So, but that's just a precaution so we don't contaminate the distribution system. Approval of tank diving inspection for tank 2 and tank 3 and 4. The cold sea dive port and liquid vision are to be revised. I had asked them, would there be any price change if the district selects to only do one or two at a time? And they both said yes. So I'm working with them on the end for them to revise their quotes. On February 3rd, I received an alarm monitor contacted me that the burglar alarm at the treatment center located at the end of Elm Street. They advised that the interior motion was activated and the Sheriff's Department patrol unit were dispatched. At 2:58 a.m., I received a call from Sheriff Dispatch advising me that deputies were requesting a representative from the Water District to respond. I advised Sheriff Dispatch my ETA was 60 minutes or less. Approximately 20 minutes later, Sheriff Dispatch called me back and stated the deputies found no outside evidence of a burglary or criminal activity, and they would no longer be at the location waiting for my arrival. It is my opinion that, because I always check the weather when there's interior motion alarm, the winds was gusting up to 20 miles per hour. These gusts, although were not severe enough to trigger a PSPS alert or event, it does cause a vortex within an enclosed area, such as the treatment center, they'll enter into those air vents, and a gust of wind could have entered one of those vents, and moved some of the objects around, thus triggering the motion gun detector. And the following morning, we conducted the follow-up investigation, and no doors were tampered with or broken into, so that is probably most likely what happened. On February 5th, the district crew repaired a ruptured service lateral at 50105 Bonita Avenue, Cabazon. This was a non-business hour emergency call that I received over the weekend, and I advised the reporting party that it was reported that by district water operator that last Thursday on the 4th, RP then made the spontaneous statement, well, so I have to put up with leaks all weekend? And I explained to the RP that since it's not whether you are a private person, public utilities or construction or a private construction company, it is now the law to notify Dig Alert of the location of your project that you will be digging. This permits all these utilities to mark your water pipes, gas pipes, electricity lines, and communication with other ground cables or fiber optic lines. The RP said, Calvin, I understand procedure, but this would only take two guys and a shovel. And a bunch of other words that I can't repeat. So to demonstrate the severity of a digging accident, there's a brief 8 to 10 minute video of a construction accident that occurred in the city of Culver City, where several buildings were destroyed and lives were lost. This was the incident that started the Dig Alert program. Can I get you to get the paper?
Anybody falling asleep will be prodded with a cattle prod.
Okay. It's a good feeling to know that when you're safe and enjoying your neighborhood, family, and friends, it's peace of mind to know that you live in a city that values its parks and improves its infrastructure, welcomes new business and development. But unknown to many, there's a hidden danger just below the surface in every town that it exposed. They dramatically disrupt life on every corner. All it takes is one person who decides to risk it all without taking the time to make one green phone call. Pipelines have been broken, leveling entire city blocks, homes, and valuable property because no one called. Gas lines are ruptured, destroying equipment and emergency communications because no one called. Water lines have been severed, seriously disrupting service to thousands of homes and businesses. Because no one called, and tragically, hundreds of innocent people have been injured and killed because no one called. Sadly, almost all of the cost of the accidents might have been prevented had the homeowner, contractor, or professional excavator made one very important phone call to Dig Alert. Underground Service Alert is a non-profit, mutually benefit organization. Membership consists of cities, counties, public utilities, water agencies, cable television operators, and others who have underground facilities. Its sole purpose is to ensure that all underground facilities are properly located in water, preventing costly damages and service interruption.
Safe digging is everybody's responsibility, and Underground Service Alert makes it very easy to do. Just call Dig Alert 2 working days in advance of your excavation, and we'll go to work for you. Whether you're involved in a small backyard project on private property or a large commercial excavating contract, one toll-free call can keep you, the job site, the neighborhood, and the city safe from unexpected disruption or disasters.
Firefighter, we have an explosion.
We are
going to pull a large
man.
The whole street
of Venice is blazing. In 1976, a Los Angeles construction crew was at work on Venice Boulevard in Culver City when they accidentally hit a petroleum pipeline.
At first, the heat was so intense that it was very difficult to get near the fire.
The fireball roared over 200 feet into the air, fed by liquid gasoline pumping at 400 gallons a minute. Culver City Fire Department photographer Brian Avery witnessed the devastation.
Cars were caught in the midst of the fire, had melted down houses and buildings all along the boulevard was fully involved in fire. Very devastating situation, very much like a war zone.
The firestorm killed 9 people, and an entire city block was burned to the ground, causing millions of dollars worth of damage. 3 months after the disaster, Underground Service Alert was formed.
As safety director for Roll Construction, having 47 jobs going on in various counties all over Southern California, having Dig Alert and the One Call system is critical to what I do. I mean, it's a resource that I can't live without.
It truly is simple, but since its beginning, and millions of phone calls to Underground Service Alert, nearly half of all damages in Southern California
main repairs during the day are because people don't call in for their alert. We have a B&B, a broken oil and gas main, and our crew respond to those. Most of the time it's from, you know, just the service that somebody brings up in their yard and really didn't even realize that they were supposed to call.
Digging without dialing dig alerts is simply dangerous.
Failure to pick up the phone and call can cause extensive disruptions to cable services and fiber optic line. They carry millions of calls, including emergency 911 service.
Let's say you dig into a fiber optics line that controls banking. That's very expensive. Some fiber lines can be as much as $1 million an hour, and that's a lot of money to deal with in court.
There's also the real possibility of electrocution and explosion striking a gas, power, or overhead electric facility.
Our facilities are energized electrical lines. If you contact an electrical line with a piece of machinery, you could get electrocuted. From the standpoint of our own construction, it's very important because we need to know where things that could cause injury to our employees are or that could cause problems for our customers. If we're going to hit a gas line, our employees could be injured. If we're going to hit a water line, you could disrupt the water service, you could cause a big sinkhole in the street, and it would delay the construction, everything would be more expensive, people would be injured.
The process is simple. If you plan to dig, just call Dig Alert at least 2 working days prior to breaking ground.
When our customer service rep takes a Dig Alert, it's just one part of the process in trying to prevent the damages to underground mines. Once this occurs, the locator can then do an accurate locate of where his underground lines are.
Jerry Davis is a locator for San Diego Gas and Electric.
My job is very important to prevent the homeowner, the contractor, from actually digging into our utilities, getting hurt, damaging property, or it helps us protect our own stuff. We have people that rely on our service. For a contractor to just go out there and start digging anywhere, it's a big liability for him. Whether it be fiber optics, natural gas lines, one wrong shovel full of dirt, you can dig right through the gas line, which in turn could explode.
When you call, have all of the pertinent dig information available. You'll then receive a Dig Alert ticket number. That's all it takes to be in compliance with the law. It's that simple. Within 2 working days prior to the start of excavation, facility field crews or locators will begin to arrive on scene to locate and mark their lines using appropriate industry standard color codes to indicate their facility. On unpaved areas, use other simple markings, such as flags or stakes. It's very important for contractors to honor the designated dig site.
Well, they know where our water main is. They know where the water service is. If the only thing that could go wrong is if their area expands, and if it does, they need to send in another Dig Alert because the area has expanded and they need to get us back out there to do more marking.
If there is no conflict between the delineated dig area and the facility owners will either call you or mark the area accordingly. You will then accurately hand expose to the point of no conflict with the tolerance zone, 24 inches on either side of the buried facility.
Hand exposure is very important because people, you know, don't necessarily follow the rules or follow the standards. Things aren't at the depth that you think they're supposed to be. They might be a couple feet one way or the other. And you need to see with your own two eyes to know whether it's there.
If you do disobey our law here in California, you're subject to 4 sanctions. Number one, you can be shut down and your permit revoked. Number two, you are subject to civil penalties of up to $10,000 for negligence and up to $50,000 for knowing and willful noncompliance. Number three, Cal/OSHA can issue citations and fines. And number four, the contractor's state license board cannot only issue you citations, but they also have the power to take away your license.
Someone gets on in the community saying that we're lazy and we don't care, you know that we call Dig Alert, and as we said, up to 2 days to 72 hours before they come out for a non-emergency. address an issue is if you can state an emergency. And there's no question that's going to work very easily.
What is this item here on the last page of your report? So that's kind of to go into new business?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Next item would be business is Mr. Lance Eckhart, General Manager of San Gregorio Casa Water Agency. You have the floor, sir.
All right. You notice I've got the name tag here with my logo and everything. Our logo is fantastic. So thank you all for having me this evening. It's a real honor. Happy to finally get out and see other humans. That's quite a treat if nothing else. And I think as General Manager, asked me to just kind of come in and introduce myself and talk about the San Gregorio Pass Water Agency and a couple of my ideas and about what I see happening out here in the next few years and maybe our role. And I'll start really big. I've been, and then kind of whittled down, but I'll give you a little bit of background first. Actually, back in the 90s, I drove right next to that gas pipeline, about 100 yards from where the whole thing blew up, driving hammer casing for a well. Contamination case. I was doing Aaron Brockovich type work, and every time that casing slammed down next to that high-pressure steel gas pipeline, instead of prayer, I thought I was going to meet my maker. I'd never been so scared in my life. And you had all kinds of people watching you, and saying, yeah, the car's melted here, and the whole apartment building went down there. So that brought back some really terrible memories. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. After I was a consultant for oil companies doing this kind of work, I was fortunate enough to work for the Mojave Water Agency for about 18 years, another state water contractor on the Rain Shadow side, covers 5,000 square miles, the greater Hesperia, Apple Valley, Gila and El Mirage, all the way up to Creamer Junction, Barstow, Newberry Springs, Joshua Tree, Echo Valley, that whole area. I'm a hydrogeologist by training, licensed with the state of California. And I ran a department of scientists and engineers that did most of the planning work for the agency, scientific studies, and kind of a lot of community work with regards to grants and long-term planning. Later transitioned, this opportunity came up, and I was fortunate enough to get the job. But I've been doing state water contractor type stuff for quite some time. Not dissimilar along the east branch of the California Aqueduct, you've got a resource that's come late, and by the time it got here, you didn't get what you paid for. And that's a common theme for a lot of folks at the end of the line state water contractors. Right now, our long-term reliability for the state water contract is about 60%, and that's going down due to a lot of environmental restrictions up in Northern California and just aging infrastructure. And so the challenge now is by the time the project got here, we've got a lot more rules and regulations and aging infrastructure that we really didn't get what we paid for, and we need to start making plans for the future and ensure we've got long-term water supply. So we have to invest in improvements, and a couple of the big items that this agency is looking at is investing in Sites Reservoir, which is a big reservoir in Northern California, about 70 miles north of the San Francisco Bay. And that captures wet year water before it flows out to the Pacific Ocean. They divert it into this reservoir. They're going to flood a valley, and they're doing the environmental work right now. And then during dry years, we can release that. It goes down the Sacramento River through the Delta and comes down south. So that's a really project in an era where it's really, really hard to build a reservoir. That looks like it's moving forward. Fantastic. The other issue is investing in the Delta Tunnel Project. It used to be the peripheral canal back in the 80s. That got shot down. Kind of a fun fact, Governor Pat Brown, the State Water Project was his jewel and his crown for his, when he was governor, got it built. pulling water from the north side of the San Joaquin Delta through this big series of wetlands and estuaries to the south was never envisioned to be a permanent part of the project. We pull in endangered fish, we pull in salt water. They meant to have a canal or a tunnel system underneath, but that was an expensive bolt-on part of the project. Never got built. Seriously got talked about in the 1980s under Jerry Brown, Edmund Brown's and during that time, there was a lot of, as there is today, north versus south animosity. And under Jerry Brown's watch, his first time, the peripheral canal got shot down. Heard him speak years later when he came back for Jerry Brown round two. And it was really interesting. He talked about his father's project. And as a young man, he did not carry that project through in the 80s when it got shot down. And he felt it was a personal failure of his dad's project, which I, you know, really got you in the field a little bit. And he was very serious. You know, I made some mistakes. We need this for California. So that was the Twin Tunnel project. Jerry Brown's out. One tunnel, that's the conception. You know, the North wanted no tunnels. Again, they wanted to kill the project. We absolutely need that project. We're the fifth largest economy in the world, and we're lubricated by water. So it turned into a single tunnel project, and this organization or the PATH agency is investing in that project. We've got a political tailwind. We're paying for it ourselves versus a bond issue, like back during the peripheral canal where it got shut down and everybody had to pay for it. Well, now the state water contractors are paying for it. And if you don't want the project, there's 29 of us, you don't pay for it. Well, we need the project because by the time the project got to us, we didn't get the amount that we had hoped for, had been paying into. So we need to finish the state water project and buy in. We had the opportunity to actually upsize our capacity in the tunnel project, and the board made a pretty bold move back in November to, at least for this phase of the project, planning phase, hold on to some extra capacity. Some of the agricultural interests, they penciled it out, and it didn't really work for them. Currants, for example, they just didn't want to take it. The water's getting too expensive for growing crops. So that left a little bit of capacity on the table. PATH agency picked up a little bit, and I think that tries to help. Between that and sites, kind of rights the ship. But we're talking the 2030, 35, 40 time frame. Sites is going to come on first. Tunnel project will come on maybe 5 to 10 years later. And right now we've got some shortfalls where we've got demands that we're having a hard time keeping up with just in the last couple of years. So from big picture, we've got big infrastructure we need to continue to pay for. We made some bold investments to invest in the project, and that same type of spirit needs to be here today to see this area through reliable water supply. More near term, the project was kind of designed to be a soaker hose, you know, gently bring that water in, gently let it soak in the ground for water spreading. That's not the way that the climate is right now. When it rains, you better get it down here south and you better soak it in the ground. So higher highs and lower lows. So our soaker hose is now turned into a fire hose. You better be that water and getting it in the ground. That's going to be one of our bigger challenges. Charge facilities that we just built a couple of years ago. Before that, our retail agency was doing for us, probably more our role, but they took a bold lead and we're recharging the Beaumont Cherry Valley. We have our own ponds now, and for the last few years we've been kind of transactional. You need some water, we buy some water. You need some water, we buy some water. And that's really not how water wholesaling is done in California. It's done with conjunctive use, which means we buy it when it's wet and available. We get it in the ground and store it, and the geology is our tank, and then you pull it out when you need it, and you get ahead of the game. And you might be years ahead of the game. You might store several years' worth of production in the ground, but that's really what the more savvy and progressive water districts are doing. They're thinking a little bit more long-term because hydrology just doesn't, you can't count on it. There's no guarantee. So that's something that as we focus on maintaining our position on the big projects. Locally, we need to get a little more comfortable, in my opinion, with conjunctive use and lay out the funds to get the water here when it's available, get it in the ground. So when we do have a dry year, and right now we're at 10% of our contract amount here, we might not make our retail needs. Good news is, groundwater agencies, no one's going to run out of water. I would like to have been able to turn the clock back 2017-2018, we had lots of water. If you remember, the Orville Dam was breaking. It was spilling over. Lots of Northern California was getting flooded. We could have imported a little more water back then and had that in the ground and be using that today. So that's getting charge funds back then takes time, but trying to get this region a little more comfortable, kind of riding the climate waves and getting in a position where we can import and pay for that water when it's available and live off during those dry times. And a little more comfortable to do that. Smooth those waves. One of the other things, we're going to go a little tighter. For this area, we are the project manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. And so what that means is back in 2014, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act passed. As a result, you have to form a GSA, or Groundwater Sustainability Agency. And then as a result, you have to do a groundwater sustainability plan. And that's due January 2022. And then after that, you've got 20 years. That means that basically any of the medium or high priority basins, heavily utilized groundwater basins in California that aren't already adjudicated, fall under the Sigma umbrella. You've got to form this new GSA organization. You have to have this new GSP, this groundwater sustainability plan. You're adjudicated. So you've got to be able to measure what's going in, what's going out. And before, many parts of the state, many parts of the state were kind of the Wild West. Everybody did whatever they wanted. Well, that's a different era. Now you got to measure it, and then you got to figure out whose share is an interesting conversation going up and down the state. And then you got to figure out as a group, are you using too much? If you are using too much, you build projects to supplement water supply, stormwater capture, imported water, brackish water desalination, water reuse, those kinds of things, projects that kind of round out your portfolio. You got 20 years to do it. And so this is something that this area is going to have to deal with. It's not, you know, it's not going to be like this, but it's happening. And so things like imported water supply, that's an open question. And I think that before people have been talking about it for years, I've gone through the old records of the agency, and they talked about a pipeline. Now we're getting to the point Groundwater Management Act process that we can actually measure what the needs are of this basin, find out what parts of the basin are being choreographed, and find out how what can we do to try to curb that overdraft in those areas, and then figure out projects that will make you sustainable sometime in the next 20 years. So pipeline import supply, maybe. Some other type of stormwater capture, maybe. Colorado River water. A lot of people do that, like Desert Water Agency in Coachella. They trade one water over here for water over there to go through your area. Maybe. All those things are on the table, and this whole legal process now forces us to have that conversation currently and in the next few years as we have to kind of sketch out a sustainability plan that passes muster. So I think that's initially over the next year, trying to kind of get this picture of what happens with your long-term water supply. And you're all in this together. You've got the Desert Water Agency, you've got the tribe, you've got other small water districts in the region that are all sharing this data. After that, the role of past agency, I'm probably getting a little ahead of myself here, but I look at the wholesaler. Try to help kind of corral people under a larger umbrella and try to focus them on opportunities and working together. One of the things that you got going for you is, according to the state, this region is a disadvantaged community, which is just based on, it's not a pejorative, it just means that it's just a mean household income calculation. And it means you've got a leg up on getting grants through the state, and actually the Fed as well. And so that's something that some of the wholesale agencies have been trying to do, be a little helpful. I was pretty successful in Mojave trying to work with smaller water systems with disadvantaged community programs and try to claw back some of the money, some of your money, that's already in Sacramento and Washington back here through the grant process. It's absolutely available. And it's something that if you're interested in, you know, maybe you know, moving forward, the board wants to go on, we can get something going. There's a lot of people who are taking advantage of these programs. There's a lot of focus on smaller water systems in the last few years. Unheard of backbone of California. You know, the bigger water districts always got the grant money. And in the last, been doing this a long time, 5 or 10 years, that conversation is really changing to a smaller water system. And there's quite a bit of funds out there for smaller water systems, especially in disadvantaged communities. So that's not something that we're doing today, but that's something that at the very least we can have a conversation about and give you some, you know, some pointers of things that have worked and try to hook you up with some nonprofits and things like that who are very good at what they do. And that's, I've talked a lot, but that's kind of for the big picture, going down, you know, to the importing water in the region, down to the GSA, down to the individual small water system or partner agency. So at this point, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, some of the biggest concerns that I have, and I'm sure that the board's going to resemble this, recognize this also, is Amazon is the end of the pipeline. You know, there's no recirculation. We're catching all of the stuff. And past history indicates that they don't give a smart about capital. This is what I've seen, heard, and other people concur with this from your same agency just this last election. Cabazon, screw Cabazon, they don't need water. This comes from the person that was running for your board. So what does that tell us about the agency? It doesn't tell us a lot, doesn't give us a lot of confidence in the agency. The other thing is we have our neighbor here who doesn't have to contribute to the state water project. So why would you put water in this aquifer that they get for free, but we have to pay for it? This is a concern we have. Run a pipeline, both just a direct hook pipeline, or run it into the Banning Aquifer, which is separated, and then less chances of us paying for their water. You know, yes, they are our neighbor, but each neighbor is out for themselves.
Well, and they've got a different set of rules and laws that apply or don't apply to them, and for sure. And that, you know, you can't be naive. These are things you just have to deal with. And whether that water gets dropped into a different aquifer, that out of that jurisdiction gets piped in, that's one way of going about it. There's lots of creative ideas.
Yeah, but these are concerns that have been in this community for since the state water project started, basically. It was wonderful to see a 10-foot pipeline come in to Cherry Valley, Beaumont Cherry Valley. And then for that organization to want to, well, let us have the pizza right now. We'll give you some of the pizza later on. Sometimes when you buy the pizza store, you don't care about the people that want a slice of pizza anymore, kind of a thing. So this is, you know, these are
legitimate concerns, you know, and we've gotten through an election process, and those are always kind of an interesting, campaigns are always very interesting, right? But, and after the campaign's done, you know, we've got a board of directors going to be here for a series of years, and we've got some other state mandates, like this GSA that we have to figure out how you're going to be sustainable or do other things. And there's money for projects in disadvantaged communities to make those things happen. There's always the next water bond. There's new laws that passed specifically for smaller disadvantaged systems, SB 200, which is the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Program. I think it's $100 million a year for the next 10 years. I think it started a couple of years ago, so we're about 8 years left. Is a pool of money that certain projects can be built. Now, do you have an imported demand? I don't think we actually know that yet. We're going through the modeling. We're going through this whole overdraft analysis. A bunch of technical experts are looking at this. And what I can see is we don't have that number yet. And that isn't a dodge. We just haven't gone through the process.
We have to go
through the exercise. And then the reality is, can we put water if there is an imported demand, if there is the ability to pay for it with the community or with development, which appears to be, you know, may or may not be coming in, but if it's coming in, could they pay for it? Maybe. you also have to deal with the constraints of having a sovereign nation next door. And again, some of those ideas of dropping in one basin that's out of, you know, maybe in a out of a certain jurisdiction, that might solve a lot of those issues. But we have to like lay the map out and get creative. That's a collaborative process. Yeah, that's a
group. I understand. I know you're new to the position, but you inherited your predecessor's some of his history that we have to deal with, and we are concerned because we're a small community. In fact, today we're going to be doing our rate study, and if I come back in 5 years and say we have to import water and it's going to cost us $200 an acre foot, which is going to raise your bill by this much, these people are going to, you know, I know one engineer sometimes would like to just take and string me up from the nearest yard arm, you know? But we have a love-hate relationship. Hello, Terry. So, you know, these are concerns we all have, and I'm kind of a little boisterous because I'm not in a good mood tonight. It has nothing to do with the meeting, so.
Six kids.
Yeah.
No, these are normal. I've been working in a desert, in a desert region. I've heard the same thing at Newberry Springs. I've heard the same thing at Barstow. I've heard the same thing at Daggett.
You know,
out of my area.
Oh, I thought that was Kern County.
That's out of my area. I stopped at Kramer Junction, but all those areas, had a pipeline that went all the way from Victorville along the Mojave River and terminated in Newberry Springs. And you had people who had a big pipeline, but not a real way to pay for it. And there was a lot of equity conversations and on how to get that water to those people. And those are tough. You know, some of them are based on new development. Some of them are based on pervasive overdraft and trying to kind of have there's an equity conversation. It's all over the map and it's nothing new. What I think the important thing is as we go through this process where everybody has to rack up their water demands and project out in the future, and then look at the basin and see how is the health. That is the tank going down pervasively, or is it staying the same? And can you keep doing what you're doing? If you're not growing too much, you're probably fine. If you want to grow and you're stable and you're going to use a lot more water, well, that's something to be concerned about. If you're going down right now and you're just doing what you're doing today, it's a bit of a problem. And it's something that just needs to be discussed about. And then start going through how to pay for projects. Maybe the pipeline to Cabazon is funded primarily through state and federal grants. That is a distinctive possibility. I'm speaking a lot about the Mojave region, but I've dropped a lot of pipelines in that area, and most of them going to disadvantaged communities. Last one was going to Adelanto, got paid for 75 cents on the dollar with state and federal funds. You know, so that can happen. At the other end of it, there has to be a system to make sure that the people who you're trying to deliver the water to, it makes it there, it is held there, okay? So it's something you brought up. And two, there's a customer base at the end of that pipeline. You can't build a pipeline and put no water in it. That's just not a good use of taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, how to pay for that large infrastructure, you might have some investors with the state and the Fed. It's just you have to make a home, you know, a customer base and a system of laws and policies locally that your water's going to, Peter's not going to rob PayPal, or what have you. I'm going to walk that back.
We understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's got to be an equitable return, and there has to be somewhere for the water to go and be used.
Yeah, and then some of the infrastructure, which is very expensive, if it's positioned correctly, you might get some state and federal investors, and that's not like it might if you get lucky. It's pretty likely if you set yourself up and you've got a good project where the community is behind it. That's a distinctive possibility.
Any questions from anybody out there?
I have some comments. Okay. So, yeah, I know you're new to the board, and this has been, 60 years here. We are a severely disadvantaged community, and we're paying to increase other areas so they can get water. If we want to expand, we need water here so that we can expand as well and maybe not become so severely disadvantaged, right? Is there any hope of maybe piggybacking a pipeline on the construction of the new road that's coming through from
Banning.
I
don't know the alignment of that road. I have seen the pipeline alignment. It kind of sneaks through from, you know, where it terminates out in the Beaumont Cherry Valley and kind of dog legs down, and I my mind's eye, I can see that alignment, because we've been talking about that for years. I've seen the maps. I don't know what's going on with the alignment on the road, but if it's actually being, is it being contemplated or is it being constructed?
I'm going to look to these two right here.
Contemplated. If it's contemplated and it makes sense, then that's always a possibility. If it's being constructed, I think the momentum of the road is probably way ahead of where the
pipeline, because it takes
a lot to align. And frankly, you know, a pipeline for imported water going to a disadvantaged or severely, in SDAC, severely disadvantaged community, really you want to get your grants lined up. You go fast, you got to go slow and chess.
So is getting those grants, should that be all on this district, or should the San Gregorio Pass Water Agency help us get those grants?
My best luck has been a group thing. You know, it has to be there. I know I don't want to get too focused on a pipeline that we may or may not get. We may get so focused on the pipeline, but generally for larger projects that involve the wholesaler, it's really important that the wholesaler is behind it. It's important that the county's behind it. It's important that the local water customers behind it. You know, it goes through a stakeholder process where you don't have people that are going to submarine your project, you know, pop out and torpedo you right at the last minute. I mean, you want to build up a good community base, and everybody goes, yeah, I really understand this, and I really want this as a group. You know, you get those letters of support from all those groups. It looks like a good investment. What the Fed and state funding agencies don't want is people coming out of the woodwork at the last minute and going, I hate this project for these reasons. It hasn't been thought out. So you get strong community engagement on the front side. It makes those projects a lot more fundable on the back. So it's worth taking that extra time and effort to make sure you've got a good base that wants it all the way around.
Thank you for the information.
You imparted quite a bit of information that a lot of us didn't know.
I appreciate that greatly.
I appreciate it. Be involved in the GSA. This will be interesting. And just you keep that seat at the table and talk about these projects and your desires, and keep that conversation moving forward. But that really is a vehicle that I think might catalyze something, because that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to kind of divvy up the water resources, force people to measure it, and develop a portfolio of projects to try to ameliorate any long-term overgrowth conditions.
Thank you.
We are typically the lobbyists that go up to Sacramento to do things, right? So you're the closest thing to Sacramento, so we have a little lobbying here. We're going to give you a tablet on cap.
Oh, wow. It's under $50, right?
Yeah.
I'll have to. Okay. Fantastic,
actually.
So, thank you very much.
So we've done our first lobbying.
Oh,
great. Dinosaur and
everybody
love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Give one to Mickey.
Who? Vicky? Mickey. Oh. Yeah. All right, here. Well, see, I only have Eckhart here. I don't have him.
Thank you
for coming. Hey. The next item up for is something here, Affordable Housing Ownership and Construction Proposal by Victor Diaz. What is this about?
He might be on the phone. He might be waiting.
Are you on the phone, Mr. Diaz?
Good evening. Yes, I am, but I am having a little bit of difficulty. I'm listening to you guys. Can you guys hear me okay?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. I am having a little bit difficulty on my end listening to you guys. I'm going to speak
a little bit slow. Can't hear anybody interrupt. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, board members, staff, and Cabazon community. My name is Victor Diaz. I am a landowner here in our unique city of Cabazon. As we all know, Cabazon is located demographically in a zone surrounded by nature, commercial outlets, casinos, travel centers, train tracks, dinosaur park, highways, and millions of people a month are visiting or driving our surroundings. I highly believe that Cabazon has the potential opportunities for positive growth. It's in our backyard, indeed. With this being said, I would like to introduce an alternative housing solution that has the potential to enhance our community with solutions that the housing crisis is now facing. As we speak, we have a housing shortage, problem, and deficiency in several areas, such as veteran housing, senior housing, a true affordable housing, transitional housing, student housing, homeless housing. The list can go on and on. Board members, I would like to help and contribute to promote change here in our city. Tonight, my team and I have prepared a presentation that will explain how these alternative housing solutions will and can benefit our city. We have located two pieces of land where we believe should be the starting point to introduce and prove our concept. That location is Bonita Avenue, right across from the famous red house that we all know. We understand that infrastructure isn't all there just yet, but we believe that if we all put our heads together, we have no doubt that growth could be just around the corner if we all contribute for a positive change. We have done our due diligences with the county and have finalized our designs that we intend to accomplish as a proof of concept. Our mission is very simple. We want to design a solution that's efficient, effective, and affordable for local municipalities, contractors, developers, realtors, investors, and end users. We know that utilities play a huge role in our location and budget impact. Therefore, we would like to identify how we can work in collaboration with this water department to help facilitate and provide water access to many landowners throughout Bonita Avenue at reasonable rates. Lastly, I would like to thank our water department for allowing us and give the opportunity to present an alternative housing solution to our Cabazon community. Elizabeth and Mr. Kelvin, I'm so thankful. Please allow me to introduce our team members that are fully dedicated to help contribute with this vision. Mr. Griffin is our panel designer. He will explain all the nuts and bolts how this concept works. John Wilson, our chief financial director. Elias Flores, will explain some of the benefits that our concept can provide in many different ways and areas. And Nika Robach, our interior designer, will explain some of the benefits from an interior design point of view. Mr. Griffin, again, many thanks. Mr. Griffin, please continue.
Thank you, Victor. Good evening, everyone. It is an honor to speak before you tonight. We're very excited that Victor and Elias and Nika have put together a great little plan for these two lots. The panels were actually invented by my brother and myself. We patented a composite process to eliminate the use of electricity in actually building the parts. The panels themselves come either with or without studs inside every 16 inches. So they are a structural panel. They can also be used as a facade for this particular housing exercise. The panels will have studs every 16 inches on center. They go up rapidly. A crew of four will be able to build both homes within a couple of 3-4 days. So you'll have a shell up instantaneously, essentially, and then all the interior work begins at that point. But for reference points, we did a 1,000-square-foot house in 21 days. We've done a 2,000-square-foot house in 30 days, and that's soup to nuts. That's turnkey. That's using the panels as both the walls and the roof. The beauty of the panel is it is subtle. You won't be able to tell a difference between a brick house, a stucco house, or our house. Any type of facade or treatment for the exterior is allowed and obviously is able to be attached to our panels themselves. The interior, you can put drywall, you can put plaster. It attaches to our panel as it is. The panels can come what we call raw, which essentially has no skins on them, but has 6 inches of foam. So it's an R42 panel. When we add our skins and other tricks, you have a home or a structure that is soundproof, impervious to water, mold, mildew. And obviously, your electric bill is going to be cut 40-50% in normal circumstances. With the upgraded HVAC system we're going to put in, we're talking bills of $30-$40 a month for a 2,000 square foot home. This allows the home buyer to buy more home and to be able to afford what everyone should be able to afford a home where it's comfortable. It's not costing you a fortune to live there just to have the lights on and the air conditioning. We started this in California. My brother was in Riverside for 15 years and then moved to Eureka. We formulated the company in 2003. So we've done all kinds of projects for commercial, residential, and the military. And the military, we put two rapid deployment homes together, and it could be built with two tools, a wrench and an Allen wrench, and four people. And the military used it for rapid deployment barracks up in Afghanistan. This panel was also used up in Adelanto in 2019. It was used not as a structural member, but as a insulation factor for a 20,000 square foot cannabis grow house. There's pictures on our presentation showing the structure. It went up. We put 20,000 square foot plus the roof. And we did that in less than 2 months. the steel structure and the panels all went up within 2 months. Let's see. Obviously, the advantages are the R values, but it also has what is important to Southern California, a seismic protective portion of it. So we have an engineer that's licensed in California, in Arizona, and he designed the seismic applications for the cannabis grow house as well. So we rely on him for all of the structural members being to code for California. We have other tricks that we put in the panels that allow us to have a fire code, you know, class one fire rating, no termites, no pests. And obviously, like I said, it can be the exterior style can be anything that the architect or the board can come up with in their head. The attributes, I think we'll let them speak for themselves. They're very lightweight panels. They're cost effective. You're going to have a very soundproof home that is just going to be a joy to live in with very little electric bills at the end of the month. I think what I'll do now is have Elias go forward and talk more about the specific implications for Cabazon and the absolute excitement we have as a team to be in Cabazon and to show the world our stuff. But Elias has a little more to it, and I'll turn it over to Elias. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Griffin. My name is Elias Flores, and what I envision in Cabazon is something that I try to create in the Riverside area. I was a general contractor for about 35 years, and the last 5 or 6 years I have gone to Sacramento to work with different organizations such as Youth Build to create vocational training programs. And what we were doing at the time is actually working with charter schools to provide vocational training in construction, green technology, all the things. Then we got a little bit into what I started working with U.S. Vets. Everyone knows it by March Air Force Base. As a real estate group, we started buying houses, and we started to put together a plan to create veteran housing that was affordable. So Victor and myself spent years looking at what can be created. It's sustainable, but yet, like I point out, something that's worthwhile that cities would adapt to. We looked at container housing. We looked at all different things. So when we came across with the Merkle product, we said we can put the synergy to put this all together. So what I'm hoping to do with not just these houses is I want to create vocational training along with the Youth Build organization that I had worked with in the past to build this and do some other things of job creation. Things like vertical farming and all the things that come into play, not just cannabis, but actual organic farming using these type of materials to create pods. Everything I believe is job creation and self-sustainability. And this is just part of what we can do, but it all starts with working with municipalities that understand the bigger picture. This is not just a home. This is, for us, we look at it as to open the door to educate different city officials on what our product can do, but also the benefits by creating jobs, by vocational training, affordable housing. As well, you know, everyone knows when, like Victor pointed out, a lot of people drive through Cabazon. I've done it many a times. I've been through this and that, but I want to be able to say this is a spot where people can come and see, hey, buy a home. It might be a home. But jobs are being created. That is my ultimate goal, where I would like to see this go. And it all starts with your, being part of our team, and I hope we can get you excited enough that
excuse me,
the opportunity to move forward. Yes.
Excuse me, I'm the chairman of the board.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
The concern that we have is the water district.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
We are limited on what we can do in a project like this. What we need you to do is get to the point, what is it you want from the district?
I just want you to be able to see how we can work together to get some of the fees that are impacting the project. That's in a nutshell.
because we are a government agency, not a public utilities, are restricted on any and all activities. They have to follow ordinances and state laws. So you would have to put a proposal together, approach the board with it, and then we would have our attorneys look at it to see if it falls within the legal guidelines of what we are allowed to do and not to do in the community. I'm not trying to cut you short. I just don't.
No, I understand. This is the whole reason I understand. I'm listening.
So that would be my suggestion, would be to put the proposal together and what you're asking for the district so that we can present it to our legal team to make sure that if we're going to do something, that it's in the benefit of our community and that it follows legal, all of the regulations that we are required to follow. Because we're not allowed to make special considerations for different agencies if they fall outside of state guidelines.
Okay. Is there maybe like a template or a guide that we might be able to refer to on how to put this proposal together that your department would want to see?
I would suggest you make a call to Mr. Louie, and he'll get with our attorneys to find out what is involved in that.
Okay, Mr. Louie? Okay.
Calvin Louie.
All right, I appreciate that.
I met with Victor Ellis a lot. I rent a house off of Bonita.
I'm sorry, I could barely hear you. I'm sorry, what was that?
I met with Victor at your proposed site near the Red House on Bonita Avenue.
Yes.
So if he's the one, get with him and he'll get you. You can coordinate guidelines and stuff to make sure that we can even, if there's anything we can do and if it works for all parties involved.
That's fine. Get
sure.
That, Victor?
Yeah, this is Victor Diaz. Thank you, Mr. Louie. As per my understanding, at the moment, you were going to take care of put together a proposal from your engineering department to identify the engineering that needs to get done to get to our location. Is that what we're following up on with you?
Could you repeat that? Because
he said something about engineering with, you were supposed to get with Krieger and Stewart to find out what it's going to take to get water to their facility or where they want?
Correct. We were expecting a proposal from your engineering department to identify the scope of work that needs to get done to get from your mainline water access to our location. Is that still happening?
I think we had when we had met, I had told you that our distribution line stops at that fire hydrant west of that red house. Do you recall that conversation?
That is correct. Okay, so we'll follow up with you and see how we can make this happen ASAP. Thank you.
I think that would be the best for both parties involved to get all the information together first.
Okay. Excellent. Does anybody else want to make another point here from our team, guys? I think we are all set.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Ladies. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Say thank you for having us. And
okay, we're going to take a point of privilege, bathroom break. So long. What's that for?
The health lab.
Point of privilege?
For the bathroom break? Or?
Yeah. I was dying when you read the first
one.
I never would have thought of that.
Everybody's listening.
Oh, my word.
I'm sorry about that.
in my back shoes.
Are you talking about this?
We didn't have the guys before.
Oh, are you talking about this?
No,
I don't know.
Oh, you're a lot of information.
Thank you.
Sandblasting of Tank 1 recoding project. Sally.
So
that's like, we've been, as we all know, we've been transferring more money into the lake than taking out, which is a good thing. We're okay right now to pay bills, but we're getting kind of close, and I'm anticipating at least a couple more invoices for the well one and the tank one project to come in soon. So I'd like to transfer $100,000 from the LACE to the general, and then I'm pretty sure we'll end up transferring money back at some point, but I want that extra cushion so we're prepared. And you know, we can keep our vendors happy and pay them on time.
Okay. Need a motion?
I make a motion we move $100,000 from the life account to the general account for the well rehab.
Second motion. All right, I have a motion to approve a $100,000 transfer from the life account to the general account made by Director Wargo, second by Director Morris. Director Sanderson?
Aye.
Director Morris?
Aye.
Director Wargo?
Aye.
Director Israel is absent. Director
Link. Aye. Next item is old business, MBS water rate study review and discussion by the board. Do you have any input, madam?
Sure. My name is Jordan Taylor. I've met you guys all, gosh, it's been a while now, so thank you again for having me. Mr. Louie, Ms. Lamas, thank you. So I won't go into too much detail because I know we've kind of beat this study into the ground a bit, but basically, in 2017, NBS was hired by Cabazon Water District to do a full rate study, in which at the time there was a move to do a 70% fixed, 30% variable rate structure. Now, 4 years later, we're looking at changing that up a little bit, and it was decided back in December to move forward with a, now, of course, I'm blanking on it, a 60-40 split. And so we sent out the Prop 218, or LA sent out the Prop 218, and we are now past the 45-day period. And so I am here tonight to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is we have some members of the public here. We're going to let them voice their rage, concerns, praise, whichever way they wish to do it. And the questions they're going to have, so they have an understanding why we're doing what we're doing. And okay, why did we do a rate study? Because of laws, right?
Correct. Yep. The state of California requires that every 5 years, ideally, a rate study is performed with the cost of service. And so what the cost of service does is, by law, according to Prop 218, you cannot charge more than it costs to serve customer. So within that, we take the budget and we allocate it to different costs throughout the entire expense report. From there, we decide what our net revenue requirement is, and that is how the cost of service is performed. So we have spent several months going over this and redid the cost of service. Actually, in this proposed rate structure, most of the rates for lower water users are going to go down. So, you know, we had a lot of discussion about that, and that was something that was important to support. Do you have any specific questions that I can answer for you guys?
Well, that is supposed to be effective March, right?
Yes.
2021.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it is standing?
If it passes tonight, then yes.
What we did was we did the rate study, and back in, actually it was November, October, we had three different proposals.
I was on
the call. I hate that thing. It's so much better to be in person. And the biggest thing is our plan right now is 70% of our costs, our base rate is 70% of our costs. That's everything. And we did that because we were trying to get the reserves up to make sure that our lenders and all the state and everybody was happy with the stability of the district, the financial stability. Well, we knew we were going to be enemies of the public by doing that, but we felt we had to do it
to get our capital reserves, our money in the bank, up. At which point, now we're saying we need to reverse that so that our base rate is only 30, 40, or 50% of what our costs are, and then the rest is made up with water sales. So that's where we're at tonight. We went completely flipped to 30-70 and caught some flack from a couple people. And so we said, okay, we will look at it again. And they indicated, well, 60-40 or 40-60, and there was others that indicated others, and we had settled on a 40-60. So then we had to republish that statement because of the law. We didn't accept that one, so we had to go through the whole process again, and that's where we're at today. And so we were proposing a 40% facility charge. In other words, your water meter is going to be this percentage, say, if you use this much water. It'll be 40% of the total. So in the community, 40% of our cost is going to come from the base rate. So if you're using a little bit of water, your rate's going to be low. But the more water you use, the more your rate's going to go up. That's how that's going to work. Is that pretty good?
That was very well stated. Thank you.
I'm a simple person, so I try to make it so that I can understand it.
Yeah.
Do you have questions, comments?
One more that takes into effect.
March?
If it passes.
If we vote on it, or, you know, I don't see any pitchforks or anything in the audience right now. So, but you seem real, like you're...
I'm very happy.
Yes.
See, I thought it had passed.
No.
We got a letter about already with the new rate.
No, proposed. Because they're proposed. Proposed. Proposed rate.
Proposed rate.
We tried with the 70-30 and it didn't pass, so then we went with the 60-40, but then we had to start everything over again and send it out again to get everybody
right
to come in.
Legal
yeah
requirements.
Yes. Yeah. So, if it passes tonight, March bill will be at the 40-60. Yeah.
Okay, so like right now, 5/8 meter, your current rate is $68.10 plus whatever water you use. Okay? So now the proposal, if I'm right, is now $33.34. And then for every 100 cubic feet you use, it costs this much, up to, I'm going to use an arbitrary number of 500 cubic feet, and then that cost per cubic foot goes higher. It's kind of like an income tax thing. The more money you make, or the more water you use, the more you've got to pay. So this doesn't tell me the consumption rate on the page I'm looking at, but it's in there somewhere. You get so many numbers, we get all confused.
91 and 62.
Okay. So, the current rate... Oh, wait a minute. You're going to need... I'm going to...
Yeah, no, okay. So,
help
for zero...
Page 60 or...
92 and 162. Proposed rate at 40-60.
Page 95, 130. Yes. Yeah, but that doesn't give them the price for the water itself. That's the base rate, right?
Oh, this is everything.
Yeah,
that's everything.
The water
meter
and the water
meter.
Based on what?
Based on 300 cubic feet.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
All right. Did you want to see this, what we're talking about?
The only thing I'm interested in is my bill.
No, I understand. You have two of the highest water users in the community in this room right now, pretty much. Myself and her. because of horses and things like that. So,
As I would always put it, I always used to pay the car payment for the district. Now I'm going to pay the car payment and the insurance.
Well, so do I. So, like, of course, that's why I got rid of my cows and my goats and my most of my chickens and children. That cut my water bill a lot. So basically, as an idea, if you use 300 cubic feet, your water bill would be $39. But let's be honest, if you use 600 cubic feet, it'll be $45. So it'll be less water you use, the lower your rate's going to be with a 5/8. Okay?
I'll be pleased with any reduction.
Yeah.
And
the other way to
So my bill right now is anywhere from $140 to $200 a month. Depends on whether the cow or the horse breaks a water line or whatever.
Or a leaky faucet.
Excuse me?
I said our leaky water.
Well, the one thing I did was I put regulators on all my outlying water system down to 25 pounds pressure. So now all the watering for the horses and all that stuff is only at 25 PSI. So now when the water line breaks, it trickles out. It doesn't
geyser out.
Geyser out. But being a mechanic, I understand those things. So I cheated the system to a certain point. So do you have any questions about this? Because I...
Oh, I have one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
If NDS didn't have this five-year rate review, were we still going to be paying the current rate?
Yes.
Yeah, so we were supposed to have it done, I think, next year, the end of next year?
But we accelerated.
Since the district got to be more financially sound, we chose to redo it now so that we could lower the rates again. Yes.
A year early.
Thank you.
We're not, contrary to popular belief about government agencies, we're not here to rate the general public. All we're trying to do is make sure we have good quality, clean water.
But it's
hard for us to come in here. Everybody comes in, oh, I'm going to lower the water rates. And then when they look at the books and everything, they're going, oh, blah, 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 blah. We have to repaint a tank up here in lieu of the contractor we got to try and sue to get our money back on because they screwed it up the first time. We had to rehab one pump here. We had to rehab another pump out at the Desert Hills. Well, one of them was almost $100,000. This one is $250,000. Where's the money come from? That we're using the water, so we've got to take care of our car, basically. So, and that's the hardest part for us, is we're a small community. So we want you to understand, we're not out here trying to gouge anybody.
And when he says repaint, he doesn't mean the outside. It's the coating
inside.
On the inside.
Inside.
Yeah.
Which,
I care what it looks like outside.
We have to have the tanks inspected to make sure that if the coating's given us a problem, it's repaired. So they have to have underwater divers in special suits go in while the tank's still running and go and do all of these repairs and inspections. So it's
well, the only decision I have to make is how many showers do I take in a week? Or do I wash my car or, boil water on the stove and then my gas bill goes up.
Washing your car, the most economical way to do that is when you go pay for your gas, you pay for the $3 car wash and then you drive through that thing and let them worry about all the waste. I'll be honest with you, otherwise you're going to be out there with that. Everybody does it, turn the hose on and leave it run while you're washing the car and then grab the hose and rinse off and then you got all this sand on it and you're shaking it all off and the water's going everywhere. Now where? You've just used 36 gallons, no, actually probably 200 gallons of water. Now you're into the next rate tier. And you use $12 of water to wash your car and you could have done it for $6 up there. So, do we have any more questions or comments about the water rates? Are we going to, which way are we going to go?
I just have one comment for the public. I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but all board members do have to reside in Cabazon, so we do also pay a water bill here as well.
Yes.
So everything that you guys pay, we have to pay as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
just
have
one.
No.
Yes, Ms. Marion.
I just wanted to say thank you for relooking at that rate study, because the last conversation we had, it was significantly going to impact the high rate users. And this is a little more equitable. And I feel that it does, in a sense, promote water conservation, because we are in a groundwater basin and we just don't have water freely available. And we all know where we stand with the taxes that we pay, and we don't have water coming here. So I just have to commend you. Thank you for taking the time and taking the 45 days again. I know it was kind of painstaking.
What did you do to Carrie? Where's Carrie?
Hey, I don't have
that. We had a conversation about that.
I really do thank you guys, genuinely from the bottom of my heart, for taking the time and really revisiting that, because for me, my water bill was going to go from $300 to $500 overnight, and that's $2,400 a year. You know, that's house payment.
Well, I did want to buy a new truck.
Well, yeah, whatever.
All right.
So, yeah, but thank you. I mean, I really...
You're welcome.
Much, much better. So, thank you.
All right. So, I need a motion.
I make a motion that we adopt the 40-60.
I would second that.
Well, who moved it? I'll move it.
Well, Sarah moved it.
Did she move it?
Okay. Yeah. And it was seconded by Diana.
That's okay. So I have a motion to approve the 40% fixed rate, 60% variable rate as proposed in the, as presented in the NDS study, made by Director Wargo, seconded by Director Morris. Director Sanderson?
Aye.
Director Morris?
Aye.
Director Wargo?
Aye.
Director Israel Dobson? Director Lee?
Aye. Well, I wanted the 50-50 when I first, like, the only one.
You live in a desert.
Okay.
I do want to say that even Lance didn't say it, but Robert Ybarra is the new board member on the San Antonio Bathwater Agency.
Uh-huh.
He didn't bring that up at all. So.
Is he the one that doesn't want Cavalon to have water?
No.
That was the other guy.
Caldo.
And we railroaded him.
Oh,
out of there.
Okay.
He didn't get any votes.
Nope. I got zero votes.
Okay.
Okay,
future agenda items, anybody?
Yeah.
Were we going to add the Zoom thing? Oh, no, you were going to bring that back to the board next time.
Yeah.
If I could remind the board, I mean, it's been a while, but the current system we use, the free conference call at Com, that one does have basically the same Zoom and Google Meet capabilities. They just don't charge for it or have a limit on attendees like the other platforms do. Our IT guys are able to do training for anybody that's interested. But if the board's really set on Google Meet, then I'm sure
sort of platform. I don't care which one.
Well, this one is an open source platform. It's free, but they work off of donations.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my comment at the last meeting was, you know, Google would charge us, Zoom would charge us. They're providing a service to us, and for the most part, we haven't seen a problem with it. I would just as soon make the district make a donation to them for the services that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
But that's up to the board to. I think I asked about putting
you
that.
You did. It was my fault. I forgot to put it on this agenda.
Oh, yeah, I know. You're just thinking about it. Okay, so.
But I'll get it. We'll get it on the agenda for next month.
Okay.
And then I checked with legal too, just to
make sure that we're able to do it, and he said as long as it wasn't a significant amount, it is doable.
Okay.
So it sounds like it would work.
Okay. Is that acceptable to everybody?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Any other agenda items? Management comments?
I just like to publicly thank Ellie for her years of service here.
And
welcome, Ms. Ellie.
I forgot for a second.
To the water district.
Evelyn, don't take this wrong, but please don't go.
Everybody get on your knees. Everybody.
No, you'll be solely missed, but
thank you.
Thank you for your long service and your excellent service and your willingness to learn and grow. I really appreciate your contributions to the board.
Thank you.
I wish you best of luck where you go.
Thank you. And if anybody has, everyone wants to ask me questions, and I'm always open. It's been a pleasure working.
But you need to set a time window so that we don't interrupt
3 minutes
your family life and work.
Well, you always leave a message if I don't answer, because I'm busy. But I want to thank everybody. It's been a pleasure here. You guys took me in as a brand new employee that knew nothing. You helped me grow. It's been a pleasure working here for so long. I like seeing how much we've come, how far we've come over the years, and I really hope that continues and that we continue to go. We continue to better heights in the future, because I think we're on that path. I want to see if we can come. So, thank you.
Sadly missed.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, Evelyn, I think, will probably slip up to the
next. I do too.
All right. If all that is done and done, we have a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn this thing.
Second set.
Okay.
A motion to adjourn at 8 p.m. made by Director Sanderson, second by Director Morris. Director Sanderson?
Aye.
Director Morris?
Aye.
Director Wargo?
Aye.
Aye.
Director Israel Dobson and Director Lee?
Do I need to sign that paper for the transfer?
I feel bad.
No.
Have you done whatever's needed for her?
You've heard that expression.
Whatever.
Okay.